Stream and Restoration Species Recovery Committee to order. We're going to change the agenda a little bit this morning. We will have hearing time for 3225. I understand there's some people here from Watersheds who want to speak to that, but it's going to be towards the end of the hearing. We're going to start off with HB 3071. Would you like to present that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. You will find at your seat a preliminary staff measure summary as well as the Dash 2 amendments. We'll be focusing on the Dash 2 amendments. They do replace the original bill. If you will recall, House Bill 3071 creates the crime of transporting live invasive species into the state. The Dash 2 amendments define aquatic animal, define invasive species, direct Department of Fish and Wildlife to establish by rule a list of invasive species, prohibits, and here's the crime, prohibits any person from transporting a live invasive aquatic species or to introduce that species into the waters of the state except by permit. It sets a penalty for a first offense with a Class A misdemeanor, and as a reminder, that's up to 1 year in jail and or a $5,000 fine, cost paid by the county with respect to imprisonment, probation, and parole. Sets a penalty of subsequent convictions as a Class C felony, and that's a maximum of $100,000 fine and or up to 5 years imprisonment, those costs borne by the state. Establishes an affirmative defense for a person carrying a permit, and here's the additional language from what we had talked about previously. It exempts a vessel whose primary purpose is the carriage of commercial cargo from the Act if the introduction takes place via ballast water or incidental introduction. And it does repeal that exemption in July of 2001 when it's my understanding that there's a group working on addressing issues specific to ballast water introduction of species. The original measure, you'll find a fiscal estimate of $1,800 in the first biennium, $3,500 in subsequent biennium, but I will remind you that actually that fiscal we will be getting a new fiscal from the Dash 2s, but actually the fiscal will be lower because, again, we're essentially reducing from the original bill was all Class C felonies under conviction. And the cost of the state will be less. Again, the burden shifting for the cost of imprisonment, parole, and probation to the counties.
Any questions of staff before we open up the hearing? That's Eddie Thompson.
No. Mr. Chair, you in the work session?
What's going on, Washington? I'd like to call Jim Myron. And Captain Ball, would you like to come up too?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron, representing Oregon Trout. We participated in the work group that came up with the Dash 1 amendments to 3071, and we support those. We think that makes this a very, very good bill. I've looked quickly at the Dash 2 amendments, and I have a real problem with doing an exemption in Section 5. First of all, it would have to be proven that somebody was knowingly transporting or introducing, and releasing ballast water is something that, you know, I don't see how it would be possible to prove that they knowingly knew what was in that ballast water. And the whole idea of exempting someone from a criminal statute is seems to be contrary to at least my way of thinking. But anyway, we would support the Dash 1 amendments, but not the Dash 2 amendments. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Meyer? Jim, as I was reviewing this last night, didn't we have a discussion about aquatic weeds too? And did you decide not to put that in the bill?
Yeah, we did have a discussion, Mr. Chair, of aquatic weeds, and the Department of Agriculture already has statutes that seem to adequately cover weeds and have the enforcement authority there, so we didn't want to confuse this issue with the weed issue.
Different ball?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lindsey Ball. I'm captain of the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today and provide information regarding House Bill 3071. Basically, what House Bill 3071 does is expands current law governing the transportation and introduction of fish in the state of Oregon. Instead of wording that limits House Bill 3071 to fish, House Bill 3071 requires that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to maintain a list of invasive species which could adversely impact Oregon's ecosystems. Penalties associated with House Bill 3071 as outlined are limited to Class A misdemeanors on the first conviction and a Class C felony on the second conviction. Present penalties for unlawfully transporting and introducing fish are all Class A misdemeanors, never escalating to a Class C felony. Now, amendments to House Bill 3071 have been delivered, and from what I understand, the amendments were produced out of concern over House Bill 3071 being classified as a crime and possibly some sectors of our society inappropriately being indicted under criminal law. I want the committee to be aware that current law, absent of House Bill 3071, requires the same elements of mental culpability, the same laws of search and seizure, the same laws of evidence, the same laws of judicial process, and the same standard of proof in court, which is beyond reasonable doubt. The only change in present law, if House Bill 3071 is passed, is that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife will be required to maintain an invasive species list, and the second conviction will carry penalties for a Class C felony. If you consider amendments to House Bill 3071, which may exempt a certain sector of our society from criminal law and subject others to criminal law, I ask you to consider the issues of fairness, impartiality, and discrimination. Thank you for this opportunity. I will answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Larry. Any questions of Captain Ball? Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, at present time, if I'm hearing and reading your testimony correctly, Section 5, I believe it is, of the Dash 2, the exemption that's present there, this would be, if this is passed, this would be an exemption that that particular industry does not enjoy at the present time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I don't have the amendments in front of me, so I'm kind of somewhere lost to respond to that question. But on the Dash 2, is that correct?
On the Dash 2, yes. Line 7, second page.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that is correct. Presently, there is no exemption for ballast discharges in Oregon.
Thank you. Staff has a clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Point of clarification. The Dash 2 amendments only add the exemption in Section 5 that you see in the repeal of the exemption in 2001. If you went with the Dash 1, you would have the complete language as I listed for the amendment for Dash 2 except for that exemption. So it's your choice on how you want to go with it.
Any other questions,
Captain Ball? Mr. Chair? This only pertains to a criminal activity, not a civil action. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tarno, that is correct.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Senator, I didn't hear your question.
This only pertains to a criminal action, not a civil action.
Representative Thompson.
Under the present law, you already have this ability. Has there ever been a case like this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, not that I recall. In fact, the only case that I can recall in the last 3 years where citation has been issued or charges have been brought against an individual for illegal transportation or illegal introduction was at the end, was an investigation that started towards the end of 1997 and was concluded at the beginning of 1998.
Any other questions? We'll close the work session. Open, close the hearing. Open the work session. What are your wishes?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3071.
You heard the motion to move the dash two amendments. Any discussion? Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Until I heard Captain Ball, I thought the dash two's making sense, but if we are now specifically giving an exception under law that doesn't currently exist, I think my comfort level is not as high as it was before I understood that. And I guess I also look at this, that if we go back to dash one, and that's all basically current law, and all we're adding is a list of invasive species, which is probably something that ODFNW could do without this bill. I'm wondering why we're even dealing with this.
I think, any other discussion? The dash two? Representative Jensen.
I would just like to share Representative Cruz's concern about I see no reason for the dash two amendment when under the present time, and the industry seems not to have been adversely affected under existing law. I'm not sure why we need to make an exception for that when there hadn't been an adverse effect under the current conditions.
Representative Morgan.
I would concur with the discussion that's just taking place. I think that to give the industry the exemption that's offered under the dash two amendments would take a tool out of the toolbox of the Oregon State Police, and I don't think that that's a good way to be writing this piece of legislation.
Senator Duke.
Mr. Chair, in all of the discussions I've ever been in on invasive species, ballast water is one of the biggest ways they get here, so giving an exemption for ballast water doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Any other discussion? Senator Perioli.
The testimony from the folks from the shipping industry was that they were in the process of doing a survey, and the survey was designed exactly and specifically to determine what gets into ballast water and how those transfers might take place. And the concern was not that there was a high likelihood of prosecution under the current law, but given the relative choices that shippers have to go to other ports of call, that having that law on the books with no exemption for a period of time where the survey is taking place and the results will be published might make those choices easier for people to make, and their choices might be elsewhere. So the question of the exemption was connected to the completion of the survey and the research that's being done by the industry to find out what gets into ballast water and how exchange might facilitate the introduction of invasive species, and how different exchange regimes might eliminate some of the potential for introduction of invasive species. So the dash two amendments, I think, reflect the idea that not that there's being frivolous prosecution, but that there should be no attempt at prosecution during the period of time when the industry is actually engaged in a survey to find out what's in that ballast water. I understand that Captain Ball speaks for the department when he says there wouldn't be a prosecution unless there was a knowing transfer. And I guess the paradox for me is once you know what's in the ballast water, if you take it on and release it, you know you've made a transfer. So I thought that the dash two's made sense in the context of an exemption, at least until the survey and the management mechanisms were determined.
I'm going to ask Captain Ball to come back up. Did you, Leslie? Because I understood that it was intentional for the purpose of transporting invasive species, not just knowingly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm captain of the Fish and Wildlife Division for the Oregon State Police. I think we can get into a real deep discussion real quick on mental culpability. To be able to prove or indict someone on a criminal charge in Oregon, you must be able to establish a culpable mental state. And a culpable mental state is defined in four areas. One is knowingly, intentionally, the second, third is with is recklessly, and the fourth is with criminal negligence. Now, all of those have different definitions behind them. But before a person can be charged with a crime in Oregon, you have to establish a culpable mental state before you can file that charge. And that's usually brought out by evidence in the investigation.
Thank you. Representative Lundquist, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Without repeating what the co-chair just said, adding to that, if you recall, the testimony was very very pointed, I think, from the industry, saying that they were working on this issue. And what gives me comfort in this bill is that there's just a two-year period here in the sunset. So I think it puts the industry on notice that if they'll have to come up with something else, and hopefully the next legislative session would bring that forward. I guess I don't see that we're letting an industry off the hook that's not already well aware of trying to solve the issue. So from that standpoint, I believe that it's a reasonable approach.
Mr. Chair, I think the words is knowingly transport. I don't think any shipping firm knowingly is going to transport green crabs or any other exotic aquatic species into our country, not intentionally. If they do, that's a different story. But Section 4, it deals with the criminal culpability, as the captain has outlined, and Section 5 just exempts that criminal intent. It doesn't preclude the state from coming back and establishing a civil action against any firm for transporting in an aquatic species at some point in time, if the court is right.
Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess fully understanding that the industry is working on this problem and being very appreciative of that, but also understanding that at this point in time, ODF&W does not have a list of species, and so to a degree, we are now creating law to be determined later, and it's almost like we have a solution in search of a problem, almost. I mean, it's certainly not that. I'm just wondering, if we left things the way they currently are, the impact on the shipping industry is negligible, and we still have rule of law that we can operate under. I'm wondering if maybe this whole issue is a bit premature to be making law around.
I guess I have a two-part question of Lindsey. Number one, doesn't possibly put some mild pressure on the industry to hurry up and get done with its survey to have this in place? Therefore, I question whether we need this Section 5 of Dash 2. And number two is a question for whoever wants to answer it, because I'm so new to this committee, I still don't understand everything. What's the effect without Section 5?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, the Dash 1 amendments are the same thing except without Section 5, without the exemption. So the effect would be exactly the same, and the cost would not change simply because it's indeterminate, really, whether or not you'd actually have someone commit this crime.
The other part, what about this kind of gentle pressure that could be applied? I just sense that it taking it away or deleting the section of the I mean, you have a statute and you say, but it's not going to apply here. What about the general pressure that could be applied to tell them to hurry up and get their survey done by leaving it the way it is, like it would be in Section 1?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I suspect that all laws are written so that they create a deterrent effect as well. As far as conjecture as what pressure might be applied to the shipping industry, that's really kind of out of my realm. I'm not that familiar with the industry itself. And what I wanted to bring to everyone's attention is that when we start making exceptions to criminal law, that often creates somewhat of an issue with prosecution and also investigation. What we have found by field experience is if there is an exception in the law, particularly criminal law, the argument raised is, why are you picking on me when this other guy gets to do it? That's the problem that is created. And that not only creates a problem for the field officer conducting investigation, but it also creates a problem of partiality on the part of prosecution and courts, and opens the court system and our state to litigation as to the basis of the law. If it's good for me, why isn't it good for everybody?
Representative Jensen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Persuasive arguments that Senator Lundquist, Representative Lundquist, and Senator Carno are making seem to me, as I think about them a little bit, not to be quite so persuasive. The issue of first off, they are could be criminally liable at the present time if we didn't have this law at all. And secondly, the issue came up as far as civil liability. And it would seem to me that most of these people would be more concerned about the civil liability, because the award in court could be much greater than we'd have underneath the criminal prosecution. So that seems to be kind of a... And therefore will not influence my decision.
Representative Starr, and then Senator Dukes, and Representative Thompson.
I just want to get that clear in my own head. I'm going to assume the worst. Assume that we have a shipper out there that wants to transport some kind of invasive species. If Section 5 was in place, that bad actor out there would not be subject to prosecution?
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, I think probably what you would see is it would be much more difficult for a district attorney to prosecute a person under those circumstances.
Mr. Chair, there have been folks working on this in at least three states that you pay attention to, Oregon, Washington, California, for some time, and the trend has been to get tighter on the introduction of invasive species. And we know that there are two main ways that they come into the state. One is through ballast water, and the other is through the hold of the ship, depending upon what kind of critter it is. You look at San Francisco Bay, and there are almost no, or if there are any, native species there anymore, because the introduced species have taken over that bay, and there are other areas that are in the same risk. In Oregon, we've been fortunate. We have a lot of introduced species, and some of them are causing us problems, but we have avoided a lot of the problems that others have. But we look at Washington State, and we see them coming. And it's just Oregon has been behind in doing something about it, and Section 5 is really a move in the wrong direction. It deletes Section 4, and if you look at Section 4, it says if the person knowingly transports, they know that they're transporting. And then for the marine industry, we're going to delete that. So it's okay for them to knowingly transport invasive species into Oregon. Not for anybody else, but just for them. That doesn't make any sense to me. We're going in exactly the opposite direction, but the three states working together have said we need to move in. So, I mean, the dash twos are a wrong direction to take.
Senator Thompson?
I agree with what you said. There is, and I wanted to make a comment to Representative Cruz's comment. This main intention was to stop the mittencrab transport, but to me, it doesn't make any difference which species and where it comes from. The disaster is the same. So,
yes, Senator Nelson.
I guess my concern is that we need a statute at all. I think Lindsay's testimony is the only change in present law if this bill is passed is that Oregon Department will require to maintain an invasive species list. And the second conviction will carry penalties for Class C felonies. Now, am I correct in understanding that you could charge under the present law for bringing in invasive species?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's not entirely correct. The present laws pertain basically to fish. There are other species that would be classified as invasive, which the Department of Fish and Wildlife would be required to create a list for. So in other words, things like mitten crab, a zebra mussel.
So there would be a substantial change in present law, then, if you're creating a bigger species.
Right. The Department of Fish and Wildlife would be required to create that invasive species list rather than just refer to fish.
How would you go about proving that somebody knowingly transported that in ballast water? I mean, from your, as a practical viewpoint, how would you be able to prove a crime under the statute?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, haven't been able to do it yet.
Representative Cruz?
Yeah. Thank you. I see Joe Rolega lurking in the back of the room. Well, actually, he's sitting, not lurking. I was wondering if we could get a comment from him on as to how long he could estimate that it would take ODFNW to create this list. That's my first question.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Rolega. I'm the Assistant to the Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, if this bill passed, we would have our staff prepare a list based on the definition in this law of an invasive species, which might take us about 45 days. And then we would start a couple of public hearings out in the field, and then a commission determination of the list. When we went through the same sort of process with the sale of wildlife parks, it actually took about 18 months from the end of the biennium until the list was in place. I would think that this would be less complicated, somewhat clearer, but I would have to say at least 6 months, and I would hope not much longer than that.
I'm going to ask Kirk to call the roll. For the dash two amendment.
No.
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 Aye.
Aye. No.
No. First, aye. Aye.
We got to get a calculator.
What's our tally?
9-5-5.
Motion fails. Do we have another motion, Chair?
When we get a tally, this doesn't have to be done by house. I mean, 9-5 doesn't tell us anything, does it?
Let's get a passport house.
Yeah.
Good. Do we have a second motion? Just anything? Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments.
Mr. Chair, point of order, what was that vote count again?
I thought.
I had two senators and two senators voting in May.
Two senators voted nay. Duke and Shields. Point of clarification, the rules, the committee rules do require that a majority of each chamber sitting on this committee, so if we fail for a majority of either chamber in the vote count, it fails.
You've heard the motion for dash ones. Any comments?
I didn't finish the motion.
Anything?
Mr. Chair, I move dash one amendments to the House Bill 3071.
Heard the motion. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jessen?
Yes, I have one major problem with this bill, a problem that I see too much of this time in the legislature, and that is passing the financial responsibility of much of this on to local government. Any of the imprisonment that might be taking place or the penalties going into the county government, if I understood staff correctly when we were talking about that. And we continually are reducing or trying to reduce ways that local government has to generate revenue and continue to put more obligation on them in terms of how to carry out the laws of the state, and I would have to have that clarified before I could support the motion.
Captain Bowe, would you like to clarify this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, maybe this could create further discussion. Of course, under Class A misdemeanors, the penalty is up to 1 year imprisonment in jail and a maximum monetary fine of $5,000. And as a Class A misdemeanor, jail service is at the county level. Does not move into state level at all. It's when it moves into Class C felony where the state would be required to imprison a person penalized under Class C felony status, which is the second conviction under proposed 3071. When the Criminal Justice Commission called and talked to me about the number of people that would be moved into the state system, I explained to the commission that we have not indicted or charged that many people with transporting fish or introducing fish. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, one in the last 3 years is what I recall. And so that's not creating a greater burden on the state system, certainly if this is moved into a Class C felony status. I think most of it would be at the county level under Class A misdemeanor penalties.
Did you have your question answered?
Yes, I was just going to say the defense rep on that.
Okay. Representative Thompson?
I'd like to remind you that I agree that there might be some burden in there along the way, but the burden of the loss of the fishery is what's costing the state and local governments millions and millions of dollars now. And if you think that the mitten crab coming into this state wouldn't destroy salmon or the zebra mussel, that cost would be far greater than the cost put on local government. Colonel?
Let's hear that question for the gentleman. In front of us, if I may change the subject. Under the dash ones, will the dash ones require Fish and Wildlife to check ballast water on vessels coming into our port? Under subsection 4, requires Fish and Wildlife to issue a permit to bring these species in. Would that be implied that you would then have to check ballast water for these species?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carnell, I have the dash 2s. I don't have the dash 1s.
Well, subsection 4 doesn't say no English, right?
Exactly the same except without section 5.
Okay.
Section 4 then.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, but I can't interpret this well enough to tell you to answer the question. I would not assume that we would be in the process of issuing ballast water permits. Unless the person who owns the ballast water came to us and said they wanted a permit, in which case we'd have to figure out whether we did that or not. And I'm sorry, I don't know.
I wouldn't think that a permit would be required unless the person intended to bring in exotic species.
Mr. Chairman, I know we wrote that section with the idea that it would allow flexibility, for instance, of grass carp, where we intentionally wanted to be able to move species about that that in some cases could be invasive, but in other cases could be very beneficial in a controlled situation.
Well, two things, Mr. Chair. One, I'm anxious to see ODSW get the plant list so that we've got things like hydrilla and things on a list and we can try to do something about them. But just to follow up on Representative Thompson's comments about the mitten crab, remember, these are the crabs that can live in either fresh water or salt water, where the female carries a million eggs, and they can live for 4 days outside of water. And they tend to settle in the estuaries where they eat the smolts, and they can plug up the diversion screens that we've been spending so much money putting on. So, I mean, if you think there's a threat out there to salmon, you're worried about the terns, wait till mitten crabs get here. And I think if this is one way we can try to begin to get at them, we need to do a lot more, but this is the start.
Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, in some degree, I wish that the Bass ones ended after Section 3. We already have law on dealing with invasive species. You know, I guess I can envision in response to what Joe was just talking about, I mean, there's invasive species and maybe there's subclasses under that, you know, for the purpose of some are going to be good some places and bad other places, and we don't have plants listed, and I guess I would feel a whole lot better about creating a new set of law based on a known list rather than a new set of law based on we're not sure what.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, I believe that the maker of this bill had the idea that a new invasive species comes on our radar screen very rapidly. Within a few days, a university professor or somebody will call the department up and say, there's something new, get it on the list. And what we do is do a very quick interpretation of the science, and the director would make an emergency administrative rule, and then we would publish information about this species, and that's why we need to have this higher class of invasive species that's different than the species that are covered under our wildlife integrity rules, so that we can react very rapidly, so that we can get the word out, and we can somehow educate the public to help us prevent this sort of thing from happening. It has to be very rapid. These species work very rapidly. They come on the scene very rapidly, and they can be incredibly destructive.
Thank you. Any other comments? Will the clerk call the roll, please? On the dash one, amendments?
No.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Just to open the
aye.
Aye.
Senator Butte?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Senator Carmel?
No.
Senator
Carroll?
Aye.
Senator aye. Motion passed. Do we have a motion on the bill as amended? Representative Thompson?
Chair, I move House Bill 3071, the dash one amendments to floor with two pass recommendations.
Any comments? Will the clerk call the roll?
Motion carries. I'm going to ask Lieutenant Thompson to carry the bill.
I hope there's a little less controversy on the floor.
Committee, I'm going to go to House Bill, open the hearing on House Bill 2881, but I'm going to stop the discussion at 15 after so that we have time for some watershed people to discuss 3225. So, staff, would you like to present the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You would have received last Thursday, when this was on our agenda, the staff measure summary and 2881, as well as the Dash 1 amendment. The original bill requires the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt statewide standards for treating stormwater runoff. The Dash 1 amendments replace the original bill. Instead, it would create a stormwater management task force, a legislative task force with 9 members, being 4 senators appointed by the president, 4 representatives appointed by the speaker, and a 9th member appointed by the legislators appointed to sit on that task force. It directs the task force to study various issues, including the need for general standards for local governments to follow, establishing risk factors to determine stormwater management problems and solutions, along with fees linked to those risk factors, whether or not to restrict the level of fees, whether to require local governments to collect a fee to fund the state's monitoring of those efforts, and to develop a set of model rules. It does direct the Department of Environmental Quality to provide technical assistance to the task force, requires pre-session filing of the recommendations for legislation, and repeals the task force on December 31st, 2001. I will point out it also requires for operation of that task force that official action be by approval of a majority of a quorum of the members present. I wanted to point out that voting piece in there. The fiscal on the original was quite a lot, $1.3 million, to develop statewide standards. Instead, the Dash 1 amendments, the cost would be associated with the per diem of the legislators sitting on that task force, as well as the technical assistance provided by the department.
Any questions? We'll move to our list, then John Chandler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association, here in support of House Bill 2881. We asked for this bill to be introduced initially to deal with a very important and growing, increasingly more so, subject for the development industry, and that's the issue of stormwater runoff and erosion control. We are faced with a increasing regulatory burden, decreasing certainty, not sure exactly what the rules are or who the players are in that arena. And as you know from hearing on the salmon issue in this committee, the issue of stream preservation sediment control is going to be one that's with us from now and infinitum into the future. Unfortunately, as we got working on 2881, I realized that I had opened up a box that I wasn't sure how to close by setting up a set of statewide standards in advance of any body of law existing on the subject, which is basically the case. The Clean Water Act at federal level determines stormwater, or gives a mandate for stormwater treatment, but doesn't give a whole lot of guidance. There is no set of ordinance, no set of statutes in the ORS that talks about stormwater runoff or erosion control. It's basically left to agency interpretation, local government interpretation, and the original 2881 was starting in the middle of a discussion where we haven't had the preliminary conversation yet. After a great deal of thinking and head-scratching and a lot of very good help from the Department of Environmental Quality, I really want to express my appreciation on the record for all the time they put in on helping us with this issue. We came up with the Dash 1 amendments, which are, as the committee staff has told you, setting up a legislative task force to look at this issue. And we believe this is a very important issue for the state, one that is going to require legislative oversight, both in the discussion and in the implementation of the rules that may come out of it. And one that's going to help guide our direct our efforts, both on salmon recovery and on Clean Water Act compliance, into the future. We don't know what the rules are, we collectively. The development industry certainly doesn't. We, the citizens, don't know what the rules are. We may or may not have a whole lot of control over that, depending on what the federal government does. But at the very least, we believe that 2881, with the Bakken amendments, will give us a much better handle and a much better way of looking at what's going to happen into the future. Mr. Chairman, if I may, real quickly, there was another amendment that we're going to add to this bill on the way back through. We didn't have time to get it out of Ledge Council this time. If you have the dash ones in front of you on the first page, you have subsection 1, sub 2, and it has a bunch of little letters there saying the task that the task force is going to look at. We're going to add to that a topic of another bill of ours this session, and that's to ask them to look at the task force to look at urban infill issues. In other words, when you have a small site in inside of an urban Gulf boundary, should there be a different set of rules for that, given the fact that we have a state policy for increasing density? There's another bill in the House right now. We're going to try to roll that concept into this bill when it comes back to our amendment. I want to make it real clear that this is we've tried to limit this exclusively to development-related issues. We're not trying to get at agriculture in any way, shape, or form, or timber or anything else. We are wanting to look at the issue of site disturbance as it relates to commercial, industrial, and residential development. We think that's necessary, and we hope this bill will do it. Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to take any questions you may have.
Any questions from Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes?
John, why not just make this a subcommittee of this committee? I get occasionally get frustrated with all of the task forces that we create. And as long as it saves the stormwater, it seems as though, I mean, this is an issue we've talked about before. It relates to the water that's out there and the critters that are in it. This subsection 9 of section 1 tries to explain how the bills get introduced, but a task force around here doesn't have the authority to introduce bills, so I'm not sure when it says that they shall be, it doesn't say the task force can pre-session file them, but that they shall be prepared in time for pre-session numbering and all of that, and I don't know how you accomplish that. It doesn't say their report goes to anyone. And there's no requirement that anybody do it because you can't require that anybody file a bill. It just seems to me if you put it as a subcommittee of this group here that it would come back to the people that are likely to end up dealing with it next session anyway.
Mr. Chairman, can I introduce that? Other than the delay factor of the week here, that's absolutely fine. The setting up of the new task force was not an attempt to end run this committee. As much as anything else, it was out of, as I understood, there's some question about how far this committee is going to continue working into the interim, and I have not been watching the effort here, so sure. I may well be wrong.
And told all of us that.
Well, and I'm not.
This is being in the minority.
I'm not very high on the list of people to get told that either, apparently, but what we want is a legislatively comprised committee to look at this issue, and it makes no difference whether it's a task force or this committee. We thought about the Joint Committee on Land Use, and there's somebody we think is important to have legislative involvement, but I'm not at all married to this concept. If this committee is going to continue on in the future, that would be, as you said, that's very logical and fine.
You also save yourself a fiscal.
There is that.
Any other questions? Representative Morgan, but before you start, Representative, could I have Pete Test and Glenn Stonebrink start making your way up? Go ahead.
Not so much a question, but a comment that in terms of the building industry and land development in all the urban areas of the state, the needs to address stormwater runoff water quality standards are just going to become more and more important as we move ahead with all of these recovery plans that are coming out with the salmon. And I think that Senator Dukes has a good point, but I'm not sure that what I think that is that we have a need here to study this problem, and the form that the study takes, I think, is secondary to the need to do it.
Okay. Any other questions? Glenn Stonebrink?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Very quick comment. If the amendments are passed, we have no concerns with this bill. If they are not passed, we have strong concerns for this reason. because in Section 1, this bill refers to the Federal Clean Water Act, and it, in many places we're talking about water runoff, whether it be stormwater runoff or any other kind of runoff. In the Clean Water Act, the term runoff is not utilized. However, there is an initiative by the Clinton administration to set up a Clean Water Action Plan in which it is filled with the term runoff. And Pete just whispered to me a moment ago about the Camp Creek case, which is a federal case dealing with the Clean Water Act, was refused to be heard by the Ninth Circuit of Court unless it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. That would hold, which is essentially this, that non-point source pollution cannot be regulated under the Federal Clean Water Act. So you see my concern here is that we would be addressing a federal law under this state law to set standards that can't be regulated by the federal law.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Senator.
Can non-point source pollution be regulated under the Endangered Species Act?
Representative, the non-point source pollution is not addressed in the Endangered Species Act. You're talking about the federal Endangered Species Act.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Test.
For the record, Pete Test, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, just a slight clarification of what Glenn said. It just said that in the case, the decision in the Camp Creek case said that permits and leases basically dependent on non-point sources do not need 401 certification. There was some language that said that the other part might be saying that the decision did not deal directly totally with non-point source. So I can explain that to Representative Leonard afterwards if you want to take a minute. For the record, on Bill 2881, we did not support the original legislation because we felt that it was too broad and would have included agriculture and forestry, actually, and within the urban growth boundary, and we have the 1010, and forestry has Forest Practices Act, which covers their runoff and non-point source pollution, and we're preparing an exemption, but we would support, if these amendments are accepted, then we have no problem with the bill and encourage the building industry to try and get the rules and regs more or less uniform. I'm sure it'd be easier for them. Thank you.
Could I add one point of clarification? Sure. To Representative Leonard, I said what the Clean Water Act said you can't do, but I didn't tell you what it can do with non-point source. And there are the old 208 section and the 319 section says that there is incentive programs under the Clean Water Act to help reduce non-point source pollution, which I think fits the entire concept of what we've been talking about under Measure 66 and 10 chance and that whole arena.
Representative King? The legislative task force doesn't say anything about partisanship, so that conceivably it could be all one party or the other in the appointment. I'm wondering if there's and I'm kind of anticipating that this committee might be going forward. I wonder if this committee might be an appropriate body to deal with this kind of issue. So that because we're guidelined by how many from each party can be on the commission.
I'd just like to comment as the chair that I'm concerned that we don't overload this committee. We know what kind of a workload we had last interim, and we're gonna during this session we haven't dealt with any of the oversight issues, and there's a lot of them out there right now that we should be discussing. So if we further task this committee with a subcommittee to deal with something this specific, I think we're going to be overloading some of our folks. Representative King?
If I could find just a little further, and I understand that, and you've got a better sense of the interim workload than I do, that might mean that four is an odd number then to deal with ratioing. So it would make sense from that standpoint to make the committee a little larger or slightly smaller in order to go through that.
I would not be opposed at all, though, to a bipartisan committee. I think that's absolutely essential, and I assume that's what the intent was. But.
Mr. Chairman, Representative King, absolutely that was the intent. I won't presume to know what the House and Senate rule provide. I would suspect that any such task force would be bipartisan by operation of of practical politics, if not House and Senate rules. But our intention was to get a bipartisan, dispassionate look at the issue. The committee size of 4 and 4 and 1 is, frankly, that sort of lets council boilerplate out of their form book of committee and task force membership. And as I mentioned to Senator Dukes, we're not at all, the idea underlying this bill, this task force, is what we would like to see kept moving. How this task force is structured, I believe the bill will come back through here for another peek. We'd be happy to play around with the makeup of the group and all of that. But I do want to, if we can, hopefully keep the bill moving, because I believe it's a very significant, certainly a significant issue for us, and I think it's a significant issue for the state as we try to comply with the ESA and the Clean Water Act.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the interim committees and task force fall under the same proportionality rules as session committees do, so that would be addressed.
In the House.
What are your, well, is there any more testimony? Thank you very much. We're going to close the hearing and open the work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Chair. I move that on the -1 amendments to House Bill 2881 that we delete Section 1-1, Section 1 sub 1, on page 1, and in other places in the bill where it says task force, we insert an appropriate interim committee, legislative committee. And if I understand from staff correctly, that moves us to this being a working group or something within an appropriate interim committee and not a separate task force, so that we weave it into what we're normally doing as an issue to be studied. And I was consulting with Senator Tarnow because I thought maybe it belonged in water, and he said, and maybe it belongs in A. So that's why I've gone to the appropriate interim committee as opposed to saying that it would necessarily be here or water or ag.
So you're making an amendment to the...
To the amendment, yes.
You heard the motion. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
Given that I've only looked at these -1 amendments today, I may be missing something, but it would seem to me that the study that's outlined in Section 1, Subsection 2, A through E, really doesn't require looking at what stormwater may cause in terms of pollution. It talks a lot about, or it does talk about, the need for local governments to follow the standards local governments need to follow in adopting local stormwater runoff regulations and so on, and site-specific analysis of the risk involved of what kind of runoff may occur to a specific site. But I am concerned about things like heavy metals. I know that are a problem in stormwater runoff in Portland. The source of those heavy metals, petroleum runoff from after it's been dry a long time, and again, particularly in Portland, and it rains. So those kinds of things aren't included in this criteria here, and it isn't that I'm opposed to looking at these. I think it needs the listing to be more expansive if we're going to actually look at stormwater runoff.
Representative Martin?
What I would like to ask Senator Dukes to do is if she would amend her motion to include a subsection F that deals with urban infill issues.
Chair, I don't have any problem with that. It may not be the same interim committee, but I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
And as I understood, Mr. Chandler, that was going to be covered in a separate bill?
I believe he was wanting to go into this study.
It came back from the House. He wanted to.
Mr. Chandler, could you clarify this for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The record, John Chandler again. The amendment that Representative Morgan is talking about is actually in Ledge Council to be attached to 2881, to be the -2, if it simply isn't ready yet. It is also the subject of another bill that we have, House Bill 2882, that is our intention to move that content into this bill and move the whole thing forward. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, can I address Representative Leonard's concern? What we're coming to do with this, and the reason we changed it from the original bill, was trying to get away from the issue of standards so much, not trying to vary what those are. We'll be discussing them as part of this. But our intent here was to look more at the practical aspects and the how does it work. We recognize that someone, probably the federal government, is going to be setting the standards for heavy metals and for sedimentation for this and that. And all we're trying to do is figure out how do we comply with those rules and regulations. That was the kind of the quagmire that the original bill wandered into, that we were trying to vary at the state level, something that was being set at the federal level, and we weren't going to have much success. We also point out in line 13 to 14 on page 1, including but not be limited to. We were trying to be inclusive as we could in the enumerated categories, but also leaving it open for the task force to look at whatever needs to.
I'm sorry, John, where's that language again, including but not limited to?
I see, right, line 13 to 14. Page
okay.
One.
Like I said, I just looked at them today. I appreciate you pointing that out.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Duke.
I'm going to withdraw my motion so that we can, because the infill is new and we don't have the language before us. The other was pretty easy to do. Withdrawing to suggest that we go to LC and get this drafted and then bring it back so we have real language in front of us.
And that would be the chair's wishes as well, and try to bring it back tomorrow afternoon or for sure by Thursday. Representative Lundquist?
This might be a question to the staff. Will we have majority of the quorum listed in here, which means three members out of the nine could pass the intent of the legislature, or the findings of the committee? Is that standard?
I quite frankly would have to check with legislative council. Language that I'm most familiar with requires a majority of the appointed members, but I definitely would want to know the opinion on that.
I guess that's a little of my concern. If you have three members out of the nine deciding what might happen, it seemed like the majority of the members would be reasonable.
Okay. With that, I'm going to close the work session, and I'm going to open the hearing on House Bill 3225, and I'm going to ask Janice Green, Rick Stone, and Deborah Boone to come forward, please. Deborah, would you like to start?
Sure. For the record, my name is Deborah Boone, part-time coordinator of the Mechanic and Watershed Council in the upper left coast of the state of Oregon. We met over the weekend with a couple of board members and looked over the Dash 2 amendments to 3225, and there's very few suggestions for additions and tweaks. And one of the things that sticks out at me in our county, and I'm sure around the state, is on page 3, which is section 7.2i. And this may be covered later in it or somewhere else, I've missed it, but I want to make sure this is considered at least, where it says to coordinate state agency comments and activities. Also encourage counties, cities, local governments to do so also, so that when you're dealing with planning decisions at the local level, that they match what the state has mandated through the executive order to other agencies, so that when it gets down to LUBA, they don't kick it back, and it's just a lot of time and money and wasted time for both the local people and the developers. And in moving on to page 4, and it could be that you've added that in B and D. I'm not sure that. I just want to get that out. We didn't really like the National Heritage Advisory thing, but we liked the idea of it, which is keeping the inventory. And I would encourage that you do keep that. Under the section 8, I guess, on page 7, to make sure that watershed assessments are included in the expenditure of the monies. I don't have my glasses. I hope this is right. Section 6A. add in that at the end of expenses of research, design, and other technical requirements. And that's for the implementation of a project, just to make sure watershed assessments could be covered with the 65%. And knocked out the rest of that. Oregon Heritage. Over on page 14, section 17, we thought that was very important to make sure that that stays in as the law that it defines there, 541.355. Just that commenting on that, the implementation of the watershed conservation restoration enhancement requires a comprehensive and cooperative approach, including the assessment of the condition of the watershed. B says it all. That each watershed in Oregon is unique and requires different management techniques and programs to keep in mind, using that with flexibility when you make your final decision on how this is going to be. And then finally, to make sure that on the board, expansion includes a tribal member, and maybe we were a little bit, we weren't sure on what to say on this, on the Section 18.3 regarding consensus basis of operation. Some people wanted 50% plus one. Some people said two-thirds. I think what they were saying is they didn't want the decision-making process on the part of the board to have to be totally unanimous, so that one person on the board could kick a project out that may be a very good project or idea. Thank you.
Debbie, and I was probably busy and didn't catch it, but when you were speaking of we, who are you representing?
Mechanic and Watershed Council.
Okay. Rick?
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Debbie, you just looked at the two, you didn't look at the dash five?
We like the dash two.
But did you look at the dash five?
Yes, we did.
Mr. Chair, if it would be all right, Mr. Eric Carlson from the Clackamas Watershed Council could join me. We're here today to provide input regarding House Bill 3225. My name is Rick Stone. I'm with Lone Rock Timber Company as Forest Lands Manager. I'm the chair of Umpqua Basin Watershed Council. I have a PhD from plant pathology and forestry at North Carolina State. Our company manages 120,000 acres of forest land and about 4,000 acres of sheep and cattle ranches, and we do it all in-house. Lone Rock Timber Company was actually nominated for both the Fish and Wildlife Steward and the Operator of the Year in Forestry, and we won both awards by virtue of our work in the implementation of the Oregon Plan. I've also worked closely with Ted and Susan in the old days when we worked on forming Oregon Lands Coalition, so I come from a very strong natural resources background. I've been working for a long, long time on this legislation. I've been discussing with people the process of working on the Watershed Council bill since the time ballot measure 66 started. And it wasn't until April 20th or 21st last week that we had the opportunity to really look at a bill and look at something that had some language that we could comment on. And I picked up the phone and hurriedly called another watershed coordinator, John Runyon, and we threw a meeting together for the next day in order to be able to have something out by Friday to provide this committee. Needless to say, we have not had an opportunity to provide the kind of study and work that we ought to do, particularly when you consider that watershed councils are animals of consensus, which means we try to work with our fellow watershed council members and put things together. We did the very best we could, and in fact, I think we did a pretty darn good job, and we came up with a series of statements which we will present and offer you some comment, but needless to say, there's a considerable amount of detail and study that could go into particularly the Dash 5 amendment. in order for us to provide adequate response to this committee. So I'm sure there will be more response coming in whatever time is allotted.
For the record, my name is Eric Carlton. I'm the coordinator for the Clackamas River Basin Council. One of the pieces of paper we're flooding you with this morning is a double-sided sheet that expresses the some of the thoughts of the Clackamas River Basin Council about specifically the Dash 5 amendments. They met for 3 hours on Saturday morning. Actually, they met for 2 hours Friday afternoon and went over the statement by the coalition and agreed with it, and then met for 3 hours Saturday morning to go over the Dash 5 amendments, and these are the comments. I'm sorry that they're brief and that you'd have to read them with the bill sitting in front of you. I would prefer to give you a standalone document, but given the time, this is what we could do. One of the other documents we're handing out is the statement that Rick referred to that was developed by the group that met last Wednesday. There were about 8 or 9 watershed councils and a couple of at least two SWCDs that met. We talked for 4 hours about a variety of general concerns, and then a group of 6 of us stayed for about an hour and a half to put this statement together. There are a couple of general things I'd say at the beginning. One, we would reiterate Ted's comment, or Rick's comment about the amount of time that's needed to go through a bill as long and complex as the Dash 5 amendments. And as watershed councils, we'd like to be able to get all people and organizations involved. So we hope that we can handle that discussion. If we don't, we would like to see sections that are difficult put off for study over the interim rather than do an incomplete job this session. I understand the drive to get some minimum things done, but there are some things that we think need to take some extensive discussion. I guess there are 3 basic things I'd say about the substance of the Dash 5 amendment. One is that the coalition supports the institutionalization of the Oregon Plan. And I guess the only comment I'd make on that is that we'd like to see that written more in English so that somebody who's not familiar with statutes can read it and sort of know what it means the first time around. The second is we're very concerned about the definition of capital expenditures. Given what we said, the definition in the Dash 2 amendments is much preferable to the definition in the Dash 5 amendments as they stand now. We are concerned about the way in which, about the designation of the single agency to administer the Restoration and Protection Fund, because we are chronically cash short and we have cash flow problems, we being Watershed Council specifically. And the experience of state employees is that the Water Resources Department is much quicker at making payment than the Department of Administrative Services. And Water Resources understands the program. They're set up to do this now. We would like to see WRD designated as the single agency for that half of the fund. And then finally, the coalition and the Clackamas River Basin Council supports broadening GWEB. We have some discussions that we need to conduct among ourselves about exactly how to do that, but we do support broadening GWEB and making it more representative.
Okay. I have provided you with testimony which amounts to first the cover page, but then some general concepts on the Watershed Council, and I'm going to skip over those for now. Those are pages 2 and 3. And starting on page 4 with the little asterisks, you have some comments as quickly as we could put them together on some line-by-line discussion of the Dash 5 amendments relative to the concepts that the Watershed Council Coalition put together. And I'm just going to draw your attention to a couple of these. First of all, with regard to the capital expenditures, as Eric said, this is an area where the definition of capital expenditures is a very great concern to Watershed Council, but also a definition of non-capital expenditures. And it was the feeling of the group that all the monies, both capital and non-capital expenditures, should be determined by the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board as to how those expenditures are made. In other words, they want to see the whole pot about Measure 66 money readily available for these purposes. A particular note would be things such as assessment, watershed education, and monitoring. These are considered non-capital expenditures by watershed council people that were participating in this group. And so it's important, however, that monitoring, assessment, and education are examples of things that just simply must be funded. And so this gets to the place of what the importance is of having non-capital expenditures available for these purposes. And, of course, it goes without saying that a watershed coordinator is also not a capital expenditure in the view of watershed councils. I would now like to move to the top of page 5. And
Mr. Sullivan, we have several other members in this committee have another committee they need to get to.
Okay.
You've got a tremendous amount of information here, and I appreciate the work you've done. Can you summarize in just a minute or two, and then I can release these folks?
You bet.
Thank you.
A concern, a fairly large concern with the relationship between Sullivan Water Districts and Watershed Council is here, as well as some discussion of the regional support and some real question as to whether or not that should be in statute, particularly that Watershed Councils don't need the assignment of people from other departments, but we need new technical staff people to help with the work. And I'll just leave it at that. There's more in here that we can talk about.
And I don't want to apologize for running out of time here. Let me tell everyone what we're going to try to accomplish this week with this committee. I think we have 9 or 10 other bills besides 3225 that we need to get done. And we've discussed with leadership, both in the House and the Senate, our intentions. We'd like to get those bills worked through this week. And as each hearing, if we have extra time, we might try to deal with what we can with 3225. But our main focus is going to be trying to get those other bills out. Next week, we're going to focus, hopefully, entirely on 3225 and roll it out in the rest of that week. So I apologize. I don't want groups coming like you did this morning, Mr. Sohn, and then we run out of time for you. But just so you know kind of what our schedule is going to be and what our focus is going to be this coming week. Committee members, tomorrow afternoon we're going to have a long meeting. We're probably going to go till 9 or 10 o'clock if we have to try to get some of those bills rolled out. But we just simply have to get this work done. All of you had a chance to sign up for supper tomorrow night? If not, okay.
Mr. Chair, maybe we should be signing up for breakfast also.
Yeah. With that, thank you all very much. We're going to close the hearing.